Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. I'm never deloading again. Okay, so we need some context around that, and that's not fully the case, but there was a new paper that came out and has one of the first papers that actually really looks at deloading in the way that we use it in the hypertrophy world. So this is what we want to dive into this topic today of the paper, some of the other research around it, but also get down to the brass tacks, rubber meets the road, what in Luke and I are actually doing with deloads for our athletes. Luke, how's it going, man? Are you deloaded?
Good.
Are you?
I'm perpetually deloaded now that I train twice a week.
Luke is literally never deloading again because he's always deloaded. No, you're probably you need a deload still. You're in a constant fatigue state of baby daddy duty.
Yeah, dude. Like this 4 hours of sleep last night is not cutting it. But and I'm chronically detrained, so every time I actually train, it wrecks me. Like I was in Vegas this last weekend. I trained with Frank and we did like a full push session and I've been doing upper lower and like doing the full push. I was sore for like 5 days afterwards. I'm still like really tight just because it's so much condensed volume into one session. It's like 2 weeks worth of volume into like a hour and a half training session. But
where'd you train fun. At out there? Where'd you train at?
We actually trained at Torture Gym. It's a lot of... It's a lot of the equipment that they use backstage at the Olympia. It's got like the Olympia stamp on it and everything. It's like this black and yellow. It's really cool. It was nice because it wasn't too busy. Like even though there were a lot of people there, like it wasn't too busy in the actual gym and the equipment was cool. It was pieces I'd never really trained on before. So it was a lot of fun.
Nice. It's fun going to new gyms. So you had a lot of novelty there with just a ton of volume, new equipment. And now you're just like...
I will deload now.
Well, it's funny, some of our initial research papers looking at like training untrained people, then giving them like just layoffs and then retraining them again. You can kind of fall into that group almost. How do you feel about that? Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about it. It makes me want to get back to bodybuilding, but for now this will do. But I looked at this paper and read it and I'm intrigued your opinions on it and kind of how this potentially changes or even if it really changes coaching practice. Cause I think for me and then we'll dive into some of the specifics of the paper. It was further confirmation of what I already do in regards to being a little bit more reactive with my deloads from a perspective of doing it and handling it with my clients and not having the need for deloads be hyper frequent or excessively soon in these blocks or having to be every 8 weeks. Just kind of looking at some of the outcomes where they, and what was found in the papers regards to hypertrophy outcomes.
I think it gives some insight around, for one, I think deloads have become so established as being evidence-based training when in reality, we don't really have direct evidence on how we apply them. So it's more like this theoretical application and being pulled from the strength training world and really how we see strength training coaches deploy like tapers into peaking strength. And then also looking at like some of the other studies around, you know, training individuals and having them have some time off and what does that mean? And even some of the mechanistic aspects, and maybe there's resensitization that occurs when you have some type of layoff. So really deloads aren't quite that evidence-based that we have like the most comparable thing to. And so I think it's really easy that you want to ride this line of being an evidence-based practitioner, right? Like I want to make sure I'm doing the right things and the science world doesn't come after me. But then you're working the trenches and you're like, this doesn't all pan out exactly how these evidence-based world is saying it to be. So I think it opens up that, hey, there's for one, a lot that works, but also a lot of context that needs to be given. And so we'll go through this and help clear up a lot of that. First off, I should say that this paper that came out, for the title is Gaining More from Doing Less, the Effects of 1 Week Deload Period During Supervised Resistance Training on Muscular Adaptations. This was by Coleman and colleagues, 2023. And this is a preprint paper. So what is pretty cool is with the science community becoming more open to public critique. So this allows the paper to be read like people like us or other researchers before it goes to peer review and gets published. So you have to keep in mind this hasn't a peer reviewed, fully published paper as of yet, because they want people to have their input and give greater clarity around the paper. And then also realize, like, a lot of times when you put in a paper to get published, this thing could take a year. Like, this full finalized paper might not come out for a year later. So context around the paper, but also really cool that they went ahead and let us have access to it to dive in.
Yeah, and when we look at kind of like the setup, like group was like 50 participants, right? Male, female, 50 participants from university setting. Yeah. And we were comparing hypertrophy of the quadriceps specifically with training to volitional failure throughout. And that deload kind of came at the post 4 week mark, right? So there was a middle week for one group where they deload after 4 weeks of training. And then the other group trained straight through 9 weeks. Now, interesting. I know this is going to be brought up is like how many people are deloading after 4 weeks and, you know, are we looking at too narrow of a time scope, looking at a 9 week block and these kinds of things. But it is the nature of research and kind of like the way that we compare things. And when we look at duration in papers, it kind of falls within the expected duration of training blocks that we see in a lot of research papers within training. So when we look at comparing these to other data, it's going to allow us to be fairly consistent with that. And there were the interesting thing to me was that it was trained to volitional failure throughout the entirety of the training. I was expecting, just with some of the authors in the paper, that there would be, just like before reading, that there would be some sort of progression up in the reps in reserve or some sort of progression into the training block. But I think it further pointed that when we look at the quality of the stimulus, it was a high quality stimulus within that training group as well.
I mean, I think it's a good way to standardize it for one.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. You know, they're trained subjects, which is nice because we don't have a lot of the other papers pulling from, like, to piece together what a deload should be is a lot of untrained subjects, but they were trained. Now, what does that mean for, you know, when they're able to say like, hey, there's nothing left yet to be defined. But I think for the short duration of the study, you want to smash someone enough to where a deload actually does something. Cause I think that's an argument to be made. It's like, well, maybe they just needed more volume or more training effort to actually gain the benefit out of doing a deload. And maybe that was just too low of a fatigue accumulation. But, you know, I'll go ahead and address that point within the paper is that they did have like a perceived soreness and also like a readiness to train scale that they used. And for this deload group at week four, so right before their deload, they did compare that to week nine after they had deloaded in again. And actually for that last training block, the group that deloaded had a greater perception of soreness and less readiness to train. So actually it didn't improve that preparedness in training versus just being like continuously training. So likely they got smashed pretty good is a assumption that I would make. So keep in mind that. Then we have to say that the deload was also 1 week off. So it's not exactly how we actually implement deloads because they just didn't train for 7 days. Usually we have some training that occurs. But during that time period, they lost some component of adaptation to where when they came back, it was a lot to jump back into for a minute and erect them pretty good again is how I would just kind of interpret that. Now, that's a little assumptive on my part, but that at least what came around that study. And with some people might ask, well, like what does that training actually look like? Because they're probably not doing what I do because I'm, you know, a bodybuilder and I'm superhuman. And so it was actually – relatively pretty good volume. So they, on their two lower body sessions a week, and they had two upper body sessions per week. Mm-hmm. On their lower body session, there was four exercises, a Smith squat, leg extension, two calf, different raise machines, and five sets of 8 to 12 on all those. So, I mean, five sets of squat to volitional failure, then five sets of leg extensions. Doing that twice a week, that's 20 sets of quad work. And then the upper sessions, they were allowed to do at home in the gym, while those lower body sessions were guided by the researchers. So they actually had eyes on them then. And then looking at, if what we care about is hypertrophy outcomes, the cross-sectional thickness area, and two different points of the quad, and also two different points of the calf. So just a few things that I thought were well done to really give some credence towards how we actually program hypertrophy in the real world.
Yep. And I do want to earmark the point that you made about how they ran the deload to come back to in a bit, because there are some ways that I feel deload should be ran, and so that we kind of avoid this detraining effect, but still gain the benefit of that. And so, well, I'll earmark that for later. But I think it would be pertinent, and I'm gonna pose this question to you, is like, why do we use deloads? Like, what is the point? And is there a difference in using deloads off season versus contest prep, and how we're doing that? And what are we looking for? And I think if we answer that question, it starts to open up Pandora's box of what we can actually start to do with clientele and how we're going to use this to affect coaching. Does this affect what we're doing from a coaching perspective? And then, and kind of go from there.
Yeah, at least from in our world for bodybuilding, the idea is to manage fatigue for recovery purposes and then facilitate progression after that deload occurred. So through, like, you know, the fatigue, recover, or fatigue, adapt, recover model, there's going to be this accumulation of fatigue that does occur, and also stimulus that's driving this adaptation. If at some point the fatigue rises so high, you might have a reduction in your ability to adapt to that stimulus, and a detriment is then there for recovery. And so at some point, washing away that amount of fatigue to allow that stimulus to still be able to have the adaptation to occur. So at least that's, in my mind, the hypertrophy aspect. Basically, to really layman term that, you get really smashed from training and you need to take a break to then be able to continue smashing yourself again in training. If you just continue to smash yourself, you could run into overtraining issues. You'll have, like, that mental fatigue starts occurring, motivation train starts dropping, there's disruptions at sleep. So not only training fatigue is causing its own issues, but then indirectly it's affecting your other recovery areas as well. Then we also might see, like, some acute losses in training performance too. So all around, everything that could be driving hypertrophy, the quality of stimulus, your ability to recover, is starting to diminish. So the idea of deloading is to have a break and drop off that fatigue so you get back to a recoverable point to continue training. Also, considerations would be, you know, within that, we do it for long-term mental health. You could psychologically could get burnt out of training nonstop all the time. It's like if you had to go to your 9-to-5 job 7 days a week, 365 days out of the year, and you never had a day off. Like, eventually you would hate that place and never want to go. So training could get like that at some points. It really does. We're like, man, I don't have it in me a train day. So we might need to remove it just for, like, the mental health aspect. Also injury prevention, connective tissue aspects around that. There's also some idea that there might be a desensitization that occurs with long-term training, and you need to resensitize yourself to that stimulus, which we can get into all those areas. But that is the I gave a short answer of what it was for, but then also gave you some long answers of why we do this. And I think, I guess where it comes from matters, because usually in the powerlifting world, the strength world, we don't really care about hypertrophy, or even, you know, all they care about is peaking strength. So you could drop off that fatigue and express more strength. But even in those studies looking at strength training, sometimes there's a decrease in adaptations towards even muscle size, which doesn't matter for, you know, the powerlifter. And maybe that's just a, you know, a reduction in muscle volume just from training less, from like glycogen storage or, you know, or even cell swelling type effect. But nonetheless, like, yep, we're taking data from the strength world and trying to apply it to hypertrophy, which we don't care about peaking strength, you know? Mm-mm. I don't know. Does that,
as long as it's continuing.
Does that sum it up or do I miss something?
I think there's one aspect potentially missed. There is the use of deloads in prep to facilitate fat loss and potentially seeing that training fatigue drive someone to a point where we're not adapting from a fat loss perspective. For me, that is the most valuable version of a deload that I use in any sort of client process, because off season, there's sometimes life variables that force deloads. So there's like the vacation or the family trip or the family wedding or things like that, where the deload's not necessarily coming out of the byproduct of these subjective metrics that we want to drive the need of deload. And it just kind of happening in that setting of, you know, it's off season, there's more life things going on that they are required to go to, and prep's a little bit more structured typically, where we're kind of seeing that prep need arising just to keep fat loss moving. And I bring that up because I know we come from a background of people that are just like head down, train harder, like just keep pushing. You should feel like shit on prep, where that's adapted a lot for us as we've developed as coaches and athletes, where we're using that a lot in the prep perspective. And I think it's the easiest one to miss because you're wanting to do everything in your power to be the best on stage. And I think when we look at that, you know, that might be outside the confines of hypertrophy, but it's still within the confines of our sport and being the best at bodybuilding that we could be. And I think it's invaluable in getting someone to stage on time is utilizing that when we start to see those subjective metrics and, you know, weight loss or fat loss start to stall. And I think that's kind of the last one I would add to this in regards to deloads within our application of coaching that are extremely valuable.
I think just simply stated, like how we are coaching people, we're trying to just get someone back to the point where they're optimally pursuing the goal we have for their physique and able to bring about those outcomes. And that's really what guides the type of deload that we're doing and the reason behind it. And at least for a lot of times, there's not some standard protocol. I think it's getting overused a lot in modern day coaching, that it must be in place for, mm-hmm, for everyone, and even intentionally training people to they must take a deload. And some of that comes from some very, you know, early evidence around desensitization and resensitization, you know, potentially, which it very well not be the case. Like there's that study Jacko et al. Did. Basically, they trained a group for, I think it was 2 weeks. I have it in my notes here. 4 weeks. They took 10 days off. There was, you know, no change in hypertrophy outcome. However, they were tracking these markers of anabolic signaling. And as these subjects were training, this anabolic signaling was declining. So basically, maybe there's this resistance that is occurring to this anabolic and training. After 10 days, that anabolic signaling had returned back to baseline status. So this is where the desensitization, resensitization theory comes from around taking deloads. And, you know, with this being said, like these subjects, they were untrained, but, you know, the kind of warning that they give in the author's paper is that also these anabolic pathways that they were tracking also overlap with a lot of other pathways, even to, like, say, for instance, cell damage. So you might be seeing like, hey, the body's just becoming in this more prepared state to handle stress. And so you're seeing this return to baseline also in turn of anabolic signaling, but it might not mean that signaling's getting any better. And we kind of see this play out like in the study by Akasawa. They had 24 weeks of training, 6 weeks blocks, and they took 2-3 week breaks between these blocks. So almost coming to a point of detraining and then retraining these subjects. Again, they're untrained, but at the end of the study, the hypertrophy outcome was no different. Now, where you might see that difference occur could very well be in trained subjects where that adaptive stimulus is very high, taking this long period of break. They might then have to really be taxing to get back into that state, or you might have maybe a faster rate of drop off versus these untrained subjects. So it's just not quite comparable, but I would say that in a trained subject, it could definitely vary for this desensitization versus resensitization. So it's just, the evidence just isn't quite there to make that the justification I would see for doing your deload week. Would you agree around that, Luke?
Yeah, I would agree. And it's just kind of pointing us in the direction of deloads being used to optimize the athlete's ability to execute. Right. And kind of pushing it in the direction of client management more than specifically driving deloads for hypertrophy adaptation. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. So like, you know, the idea of like, oh, maybe there's a super compensation growth effect. Like I've never seen that play out. And it just anecdotally, and even in the bodybuilding world, like most guys aren't taking frequent deloads. They're relatively infrequent. If we just want to look at what are the top, the best, that get the biggest, what do they do? And relatively their training bouts and blocks are relatively pretty long, but there are still breaks nonetheless, but not programmed, proactively and also that frequently. It's like, hey, if you're having good training happen, continue to do so. And that is the idea that a lot of these times we're programming to train within a recoverable volume. And at some point you might need to adjust that based around whatever is occurring for you. And I think a lot of times the bottleneck that we see is mental burnout some, or there is a little bit decline in some just like energy, mental focus, motivation to train. It just needs to clean that up a bit in the off season phase, or it's like connective tissue, joint feeling stiff, that we would look into more of like the exercise choice. However, there very well might be a time to like make adjustments in the training program and might be taking a few days off as well. All you're trying to do is just get back to a point where you can be productive again in training. And the same thing, like you mentioned in prep, like for Atlanta, when I prepped across like 19 weeks, I had 4 days in the middle where you could say it was a deload. And it was just like an extra rest day, with one day was a pullback in volume. And the other day was a scheduled rest day that was already in place. That was enough to get me back to a productive state of training, fat loss, mental capacity recovery that I needed. And then I had peak week, right? Which is in turn deload of itself. So in a phase where there is an inevitable drop in recovery and accumulation of fatigue, if you're managing your other variables really well, training, sleep, etc., your need to have to do those frequencies of deloads can be far diminished. And I think a lot of the problem can arise in those states when the training stimulus is just never adjusted for, and you just bank on, well, we'll just use these deloads, but it's kind of planning it backwards around, let's manage the first issue to begin with, and then the later one won't be just the secondary once your car's already, you know, run out of gas and you're on the side of the road. So,
yep.
You know, that's how I've been utilizing them. And really, yeah, the frequency is pretty far between, and a lot of times not needed. I think even for the beginner or intermediate, they're also might not be driving enough of the stimulus to require them. I think maybe as you get more advanced, this even becomes more of the pertinent thing.
I would 100% agree. And I to further expand on that point, the frequency and or likelihood that you're coming across people overtrained is going to be extremely low, to the point that we're seeing the need for a deload come more from psychological rest needed or a break from just like the confines of bodybuilding on the day in, day out, or like you mentioned, like soft tissue perspective of like joints and needing to change program designs for that. To the point that, you know, I get people that look at me like I'm a three-headed monster when I say a lot of my athletes will go 12, 15, 16 weeks before they need a deload within their training block. And they don't understand how. And it's like, these people, one, absolutely love what they do on the day-to-day. They, two, execute all of the variables extremely well. Their sleep, their nutrition, their day-to-day execution of what they're doing to help with recovery capacity. And it's like, you do those things and you do it well, you're going to have a longer runway to be able to train. And I just, from the amount of people that I've coached, see the deloads more, rather outside of prep, more come from people needing a break from bodybuilding because of how demanding it is to do it well. Because I get a lot of people who come in, or I get some people who come in, I would say, not a lot, that the standard of competing at the highest level of bodybuilding requires a step up in the level of execution that they need to be able to do that. And there's a learning curve with that, and you have to develop an athlete to that. So you might see an athlete that burns out after 8 weeks mentally the first time. And as you're developing that athlete, they can go out to 10, 12, 15, which is also where I don't like pre-planned deloads based off previous data, because life variables 6 months ago are going to be different than life variables now and 6 months from now. And I really don't like predicting it or a predictive deload in that manner, because athletes are going to develop over time.
Yeah. Do you think that changes, like, as someone gets, for one, they get more advanced, that might mean they can drive more stimulus, but they can recover and adjust for the variables better. But we still have the individual that, you know, how do you handle the individual that has that variance in their schedule? Right. Mm-hmm. So I won't give my answer, but what, you know, that individual that does have the variance in their schedule that could quickly run them into the ground pretty quickly. Does that, for that person, is it the training side that's adjusted, or is it the deload schedule?
I think it has to be the training side, because if you're running them into frequent deload so fast, you're just overfilling their cup, right? It's like this Starbucks cup. Like, if you just fill this Starbucks cup up to here and you gradually move them up to the top across the block, and then when it overflows, you deload them, and you're finding that in 6 weeks' time they need to deload, you're just starting that cup almost at all the way full, right? Knowing what their variables and the outside life variables are. So it comes down to training structure and what that looks like. I have a client right now who's prepping 3 weeks out, 2 weeks out, training 4 days a week, right? And people think that's blasphemy, right? Like, oh my God, 4 days a week, that's not sufficient to be able to be a bodybuilder. But for the level of coaching business that he's running and the amount of work that he's having to do and the amount of travel that he's doing to go to all these shows where he's at, it's what allows him to sustain training performance across the contest prep. And it allows him to be tissue retentive. He's bringing the best package he's ever brought to a stage in a couple weeks. And it works for him because those life variables take away from his ability to adapt to training stimulus. So I think you have to adjust the training side, and you don't adjust the deload frequency. And the deload frequency increasing is the sign that you need to adjust the training rather than the opposite way around.
See, I agree there. I think this should be the bright light that stands out for people, because there's a bit of disillusion around how much you can progress when you're not advancing your lifestyle variables to the level mm-hmm. that you need. Because I have some clients who are like, there's a frustration that they're not getting the outcome that they want, and the expectations that they think should be there for themselves are not happening because of their routines lacking, they're like overworked, overstressed, and just, man, how much that really impacts someone's ability to have like adaptations occur, to grow, to have strength progress. It basically, you've decreased your cup size to where you don't have that much recovery tool to utilize. So it's either you set their program up to a level where they can actually recover from, which is also going to be a very low stimulus that might not make them grow at a very fast rate, or shit at all. had one guy who just wasn't growing at all because he's such poor recovery, lack of sleep, lots of work. Or you step training up, right, to where it's like there are weeks that they're great, they can get a good stimulus, but then they're going to get buried so quickly. So the reality is, like, you set it up to where they can recover and have some string together, some training, versus constantly deloading or even have injuries that crop up or weeks of just low motivation, feeling tanked. You don't want that. But I think that's where you need to set the expectations in your coaching around, hey, this is what's going to happen because of XYZ. And we need to change those variables in your life to where you can now handle more training. But I completely agree. Like, the training is the adjustment, not the frequency of the deload. The deload is the sign symptom that something needs to change when you're running into those so quickly.
It's the check engine light.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we rewind back to what actually happened in this paper.
Okay. Yeah, that works.
We can. Of was there a benefit to deloading? That's what we want to know. We Luke and I went on about how we use aspects around this thinking of, like, right, there's time to take off, but there's a rationale assessment that takes place. There's going to be some variance between it, but also proper programming might decrease the necessity for utilizing long blocks without training. So, you know, in this subject, the result was muscle size. So this cross-sectional area of the thigh and calf, there was no difference between groups, no significance. The deload group experienced smaller increases in dynamic and isometric strength, which was an interesting point, and also greater muscle soreness than the continuous group. So again, I'm not as interested in the strength outcome, but that was a component, that there was some changes around strength. Then week 4 to 9, the deload group reported more soreness and less readiness to train. So just as a summation around that, you could read it as two different ways, right? Like, hey, deloads don't matter, just keep training. Or if you need a week off, you could take it, and it's also not going to matter. Now it's, well, what if you like extended out this study even longer? Since these were trained subjects, maybe that significance would start occurring to a greater extent. So that would be something interesting to see around the study, you know, take place. I think also seeing something closer to realistic of how we actually apply deloads, because this is actually just a cessation of training, which in reality, when we do deloads, it's usually there's still training, but it's a reduction of volume to some degree. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's less training to failure. But I think it's still, like, the study adds to just the body of research around trained subjects when we really haven't had much before. It was all on untrained subjects. And also gives a timeline that's very similar to what we see in practice. So at least within this bout that we have over the 9-week course and taking a deload, it didn't appear like hypertrophy outcomes. However, I think what you might read to that is, like, if you are a trained subject, it might make it harder perception to get back into training when you are taking a full week off. And you might get a little extra soreness that does occur. For some people, that might not matter. That week off might be the beneficial thing that they needed to continue to have productive training, while others that love to train, a week off might drive them crazy and be the opposite. So I think it's there. Overall, there was, like, kind of this neutral effect out of taking the week off. Did you have any other takeaways out of it, Luke?
No. The one thing that I thought was interesting is potentially some construct or context as to how I think about structuring deloads. It could change client to client, but you talked about it not being a cessation of training, right? You talked about it being this reduction in training volume, potentially pulling out of failure training, things along those lines. And I actually look at deloads as, like, phasic, so, like, having two different phases. Because for me, a lot of times I get very aggressive on the forefront of a deload. I reintroduce training at submaximal, and then I let them get back to their normal training block. So what does that look like, or what does that mean? Let's say the deload's across 6 days or 7 days, right? We might have 2 to 4 days immediately off the cuff where they're not training. Typically it's 2 to 3. I'm rarely extending that out to 4. And then session reintroduction is at a lower volume set and reps in reserve for the last few days of the deload, almost like riding them into back into the training program. Because we're at the peak fatigue level when we start the deload. So in my head, it's like, get them back as close to baseline as fast as possible. Reintroduce slowly so that we don't see this massive soreness metric, and then allow them to continue with the hypertrophy adaptations from there. And so I basically adjust my deloads client to client based on how extreme I feel like their fatigue accumulation is. So high extreme fatigue level, a little bit more on the days off, and a little bit more of a pullback on the volume percentage and the reps in reserve, a little bit less, and it's less extreme.
Do you find when you have a reduction in load, or even that you come back feeling worse than you did, like from a performance aspect? Like you feel
like a reduction in load in the training session?
Yeah, you feel weaker. You know, I feel like I've had major drop-offs before doing it to where like there's big load reductions and also really far away from failure. Like I've gone too long in the deload potentially, and you lose some positive adaptations.
I agree. And that's where like the reintroduction sessions, I actually have them maintain their top set loads, but it's just less total sets performed. And then it's a rep or two shy of failure when they're in their reintroduction sessions.
I think it does also dictate like, what do you need to address in your deload? Because a lot of times,
that's fair.
For me, it's like joint connective tissue issue. So like, if you have to use the same load, even though you're like, I don't have to take it all the way there, it's more the point of just having to use the same load.
Yeah, that's true.
But you might just address that for your clients, like just exercise or the muscle group joint that's the problematic, then you could leave it the same on other areas, right? So I think there's a way to do it. I'm all for doing the deload now that I just keep people out of the gym. And I think for the psychology that comes to me a lot, and I think you need to think about this as a coach, of usually you're going to get a lot of what you put out, that there's a lot of like guys at like higher effort training, and to send them into the gym and say, hey, you need to stay like a little shy of failure and not take it there. It's almost better just to not even train. And that's what I find for myself. I really just not go to the gym. And that's their volume reduction and what's going to do the job at dropping off fatigue. Now, so you might have like someone's training 5 days a week, drop them down to 3 days a week. They could keep the same volume potentially in those sessions. And then load adjustments based on what joint connective tissue is doing. And then leave a couple reps in the tank if they're able to do that.
Yep, I would agree.
And
I find the same thing as all I was going to add is like this lack of desire to even perform the session if it's sub their actual session.
Yeah, now you might, if you have that person that's just stubborn as a mule, they can't dial back. When they go in to train those sessions, you might still leave those sessions dial back in volume, and then give them some different parameters to adjust for. So you could drop back their fatigue some. So it might be like, for one, yeah, you're already going to have less volume in the session. You know, they're going to like train all out. So maybe you do need to raise the rep range, or you could do like slower eccentrics and pauses to where they could still get maybe some joint connective tissue relief and pulling out like top sets and things like that. Cause you need to make sure that the deload does the job that it needs to do. With that being said, go ahead.
No, go. I was just going to say, I find that in prep a lot.
Prep. Yeah. Yeah, Pete. Exactly. People just feel like they're losing ground by not going hard all the time. But you know, with that being said too, I think you need like kind of a midweek check-in on your deload week to see how they really are changing. Cause for one, you might need someone that, yeah, they do need to keep going, or they're like, man, I'm rearing a train. Like I'm ready to go. It's like, put them back in it. Like that happened to be all that they needed. So that's when you are coaching the deload even reactively, and not just assuming that, hey, go this whole 7 days, and being proactive in that capacity. So yeah, that's how I in turn have been utilizing deloads and yeah, more so in the favor of just taking some days off and pretty much leaving the other variables the same, because I just want to go train and train hard. And I can do it and just maybe do some higher reps on movements that might be bothering me. Or that's the time to start switching those movements and just seeing if maybe I'm just utilizing them like a moron and I shouldn't be doing that movement to begin with.
I'm not going to lie. This is mostly away from the topic. I read this paper and thought about like sensitization of volume, just kind of reading the deload structure. And I was like, ooh, I'm like holding 230 snacking and training 3 days a week. I might have to mess around and find out. And I even messaged you when I got back from the show. I was like, ooh, we might need to drop a little primo and see what happens.
Who's going to listen? Who's listening in on your podcast, Luke? They're going to report back. Luke's dropping in primo. Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's like, what can you pull out now that you are you desensitized, right? But it's good to see like where this strain of like literature will go, so hopefully get some more on train subjects and implementing it in ways that we do in practice. So I want to just like reinstate that it's still an early area of research of utilizing deloads in a hypertrophy basis. So there's a lot of unknown still, at least in the research world, but I would still lean a little bit more into the anecdotal because that's where we have a lot of the pool right now for application. So I think this is where you ride the line of truly being an evidence-based practitioner of not just trying to piece together a theoretical based on early strains of literature, but also looking into the anecdotal of the coaching world where people are highly experienced in what they're actually doing to see people have the outcomes that you exactly want. Then as we get better picture from research and, you know, controlling variables and seeing what really is working, what is not, that might refine practice some. But again, I think a lot of what we're already seeing in the field is just going to start getting reconfirmed by what we already do.
Mm-hmm. I agree. 100%.
Well, we will wrap it up there, guys. Thank you all for tuning in. Let us know below. Do you never deload or should we be deloading? Talk to you next time.